originated right here from the days of the Spaniards, since the days of Philip II.
So, oh, they got land grants in the Spanish?
That's generally the reason why I am here, too, because I am the last of the Aragons and the only one that ever been able to fight. Because my father gave it up, and I'm California, and he didn't fight it.
Where did they come from in Spain? They
come from the Kingdom of Aragon originally. The first Aragon who came here was Philip II. Their name is still the name of Aragon.
How did they come here?
It was a conquest. See, they were, originally there were two brothers that came here, and which we are descended from these two brothers. It came with Don Juan Oñates, de Oñates. And therefore, according to the history of Aragon, which is located in Las Vegas, at the library in Las Vegas in Mexico, the Aragon is supposed to be related, all of them are supposed to be related because of the two brothers. Mm-hmm. So, but then the name spread. But I can only account for my grandfather, my great-grandfather in this way, that I really know the background and the history of.
Well, did they get the land, the family, or was it part of the grant?
It was a grant. See, the grant, it was, originally, it's the grant of Miranda, the Merced of Miranda, which now is called the Maxwell Land Grant. And in this grant, it was divided by several different Spanish families, which were the Aragon, the Vallejos, the Torres, the Lopez, the Sandoval, and they were driven out of this land by force, by the Union soldiers. They put up a fight, but they were defeated.
Was this after the Civil War?
That was after the Civil War. And my grandfather, see, that this was of the Spanish stock, fighters. They never gave up. My grandfather and his brother, Juan, who they called El Pecador. El Pecador means the sinner, because he never said a decent word in his life. He was a tough, a big, tough, barrel-chested man. White beard, real curly, cold, gray eyes. And him and my grandfather, then they were driven out into the plains, where they built their empire with a gun and a whip, by staking claims here and buying claims. They accumulated an empire of 36,000 acres, a powerful cattle empire.
Was this towards the Panhandle?
It ranged from the Colorado line to the Texas line. It was towards the Panhandle on the State Plains. And
this was after they lost their own
land. After they lost what they had inherited from the Spaniards, mm-hmm. The grant, they built on their own this empire.
And they were very wealthy. At, even at the time I was born, I come from a very wealthy family. And I believe that the story of my life has been written several times before with blood, bullets, beautiful woman, and money. It's been a rough life. I have traveled a long, crooked road, very hard. It was destiny ever since I was born. My road and my way of life has taken me many places, disasters, violent death, and that sort of thing. All through my life it's been this way. I'm the baby of the family and the only boy of a family of 8 children.
Oh, good.
My youngest sister, Gloria, is 12 years older than I. I'm one of those things that came along when nobody expected me anymore. And as a child, I had a very good childhood. I had love, affection, understanding. I had everything that a child would...
Where did you live then?
I was born and at the ranch of my grandfather's hacienda. And
where was this now after they lost their land?
Yes, on their own land. No. See, see, the grant was before my time, and even before my father's time.
It's not about the Union. Did the government give this land to the Union soldiers after the war? After the Civil War?
The company, as my understanding, see, this Maxwell Grant, this Maxwell Land Baron, hired. This is my information, this is my understanding, that they hired the Union troops to run the people out. And not only did they have to fight the federal troops, the Union troops, but they had to fight the gunmen, that this company imported the gunmen from Texas and hoodlums from the different parts of the country.
The Maxwells,
to run the people out.
And they did fight back.
They put up a fight. El Pecador and my grandfather carried the scars of bullets and arrows to their death, fighting for that land. But they
did
were
they
defeated.
Have Indians go with them too? The Indians fight with the Indians?
No, not to my knowledge. There weren't any Indians. But in those days, I guess a weapon was a weapon, regardless whether it was a slingshot or a club or an arrow. I remember El Pecador showing me, because I don't remember my grandfather. My grandfather died shortly after I was born. And but El Pecador used to show me this scar he had on his shoulder, the arrow that he received during that struggle.
Yeah, that Maxwell Grant is quite a story.
As a kid, I was a very happy child. El Pecador, see, my grandfather and El Pecador, after they built their empire, they went back to Spain to get their wives. They married a couple of sisters from the kingdom of Castile.
Did they know them?
Yeah.
They just went back to get wives?
Yeah, I guess so. In those days, I guess that was, they didn't have to know.
Yeah.
They liked the girl, and the birds liked the man, when there was a marriage.
they brought him back here, and but El Pecador and his wife, they never had any children. And of course, El Pecador, he was a rough talking man, never said a decent word in his life.
Well, she might as well die. She wasn't worth a damn. That gum her hide. She never gave me a boy. She might as well be dead. But El Pecador, where I was concerned, why the sun rise on me and it set on me. To him, I was his boy. And my mother or anybody else didn't have anything to say over me. He was a big boss. And when I was seven, he used to buy a lot of cattle in Mexico. El Pecador used to go down to Mexico and buy cattle. And he took me with him when I was 7 years old in one of his cattle buying.
Oh, you ride down on horses?
No, we went by train.
And, you brought the cattle back by train?
By train, by train. And we were in the home of the powerful Terraza in Chihuahua. And he bought cattle from Terraza. Every year he used to buy cattle from Terraza. But that year he went all the way down south to Tabasco, because he wanted to buy this Cebu bull,
this great big cattle that they raise in Tabasco. And he wanted to buy this bull to breed with a longhorn. And we were...
Are those Brahmins?
No. No, these are much bigger than the Brahmins. And they're awful big animals. Yeah, they are called Cebus. And they're ugly. They're real ugly creatures. I never seen anything so ugly in my young life. And these bulls, they were freckled face and had whiskers like mountain goats.
And
horns?
They had horns, but not spread out. They kind of come out like goats. Mm-hmm. And on our way back, we stopped in Guanajuato. And he said he had business there. Of course, he wouldn't explain the nature of his business at that time. It was too young, too small to know. Years later, I learned that the nature of his business was a lover that he had in Guanajuato, in Salamanca. And while he was taking care of his business, I was with his family. And I was a kid, I was nosy, and across the street I could see this man. And I was wondering why this big man, what he was doing. So I just went over there. And he was the ugliest man I ever seen. He looked like a bullfrog. He was big, looked like a bullfrog. But I never seen anything so fantastic as what this man was doing. This man was painting. He was the great Diego Rivera. And so I went over there and I just sat there and watched this man paint.
You were seven?
Yes, I was just a little kid. I had to watch this man paint. And he finally noticed me. He said, well, hello, compadre. He says, do you like to paint? Do you like to be a painter? I said, yes, I like to be a painter. I said, I want to be a prince just like you. To me, he was a prince. To me, he was the greatest thing in the world. He was ugly, but he was great. And he said, very well. He said, sure, you're going to be a prince. He says, you're going to be greater than a prince. You're going to be the king of the painters. You are already the duke. There's where the name was originated.
He said, come on, he says. So he set up a small canvas and gave me a brush. He said, go ahead and paint. Paint what you want. And I became very good friends with Rivera. When my grandfather, Santa Calor came looking for me, he found the painting. And it was then that I knew that I was going to be an artist. I made up my mind that as a child, I made up my mind that I was going to be a painter. And years later, Diego still had the first painting I made, which it was a horrible thing.
He kept it.
But he kept it and he liked it. And he even framed it and put my name on it, El Duque. So we came back to the States. That same year, towards Christmas, Alta Cador had to go to Spain because of some holdings that he had in Spain. And of course, I went with him to Spain. And I like Spain, but I like, most of all, I like the Moor palaces, the castles of the Moors.
Those were the most that interest me more of Spain. And while El Pecador was in Spain, he had a friend there who was raising horses. These horses had been bred all the way down, had been originally from the horses of the days of the king. So these horses had been bred down all the way. And he bought from his friend a mare, an Arabian, a white Arabian. But this mare was real heavy. It was almost due to have a colt. But the man told him, his friend told him, that the mare wasn't due for another 90 days. So El Pecador figured that the mare would give him enough time to get her to the States. And of course, the mare, the colt was born out at sea.
Oh.
And something went wrong with the mare, and the mare died. So El Pecador just strapped the colt with a bottle. He had two babies on his hands on a heck of a time, but he made it. We made it back with a little colt. He gave it to me. He told me to feed him, take care of him. It was mine. It was going to be my horse. So I fed him and I took care of him, and I did everything. I trained him to eat tortilla bread, to eat apples. The only thing I could never make him do was eat meat. He wouldn't go for meat. And he was the biggest pest. He used to raise hell with the cook. He'd find the door open, he'd go in the kitchen and mess up everything. And he was my guardian angel.
2 years, and 2 years he grew up to be a big stallion.
What was his name?
And we named him El Conde de Castilla, the Count of Castile, because he was Castilian. I used to ride him out in the woods, and you know, as kids are, and sometimes I used to go to sleep under a tree, and he'd just stay there and watch over me. We played hide and go seek. I used to hide from him, he used to look for me. He was the greatest to me. There was nothing, anything better than the Conde de Castilla.
I went with them on my first cattle drive, and I rode my horse. And it was during I must have been about 10 years old then. That was when disaster came knocking at our door for the first time. We were out gathering the cattle, for the roundup. They used to call them roundup when they gather all the cattle for branding and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, vaccination and all that. And the tornado, we were caught in the tornado. The cyclone, it just took trees and houses and everything. And I was lost. When the storm came up, pretty heavy, El Pecador took a rope and tied me to the saddle of the horse so that the wind wouldn't blow me up. And the storm got so bad that the animals couldn't be controlled. El Pecador and my father saved themselves by shooting their own horses and laying by the side of the dead animals. But I was tied to the saddle, and the saddle just took me away with the storm. And I was lost. I was lost for 3 days, days and nights, and nobody knew anything about me. Out of 32 men, only 18 survived. The rest of them were most of them were never to be found.
Where were you those 3 days, tied to the
horse? I don't know.
I
lost knowledge. I don't know what happened. 3 days and nights, the last night, they've been looking for me high and low. And a lot of people were looking for me. And the horse just came to the ranch by himself. And he brought me back. And
I was
wiped out. I was, by this time, starvation, thirst, fear, and everything again. I was still alive, and I was still on the horse. And they took me off the horse, took me inside of the house, and the horse just dropped dead.
Mm.
That's all he did, was take me back, and that's all he could take.
Mm.
And he died. They buried him with saddle and all. This was what El Pecador did, is bury him. After that, my entire life changed. I was only a child, but my life was completely changed. I was no longer a kid. I didn't care anymore about other kids or kids' stuff. I spent all my time with the grown-up people. I even admired and desired at that age a matured woman. To me, I was no longer a child. Something went wrong. Something happened to me. I would think like a grown-up, and very serious about everything from that day on. According to my family, I have changed. I changed completely.
Do you remember that change in yourself?
Not so much. Only that the children, other children, didn't amuse me. And the conversation of grown-up men and the grown-up people did. I would think like an adult, not like a child anymore. And whole life was at that time. It was my father had. My father was a lover of horses. He believed in the best horses. That was his profession. His horses.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of good stock. The very best stock that could be gotten. There was a company there called the Flying M Company. That was the Moores. Walter Moore, Kelly Moore, and this outfit. They went down in Texas and they got
they got a gunman, a fellow by the name of Wade Hardin. They got him out of this penitentiary. He was a convict for cattle rustling, murdering, or what have you. They brought him out here to shoot our horses. And in one night, he slaughtered all the horses belonged to the Spanish people. There was an old man. He was a little over 100 years old. He only had one mule that he would hitch to his buggy. And that was the only thing he had, that mule. He also killed him. And
they wanted to drive you off? From
heaven, anything.
From the grazing floor?
Yes. And then I also remember the range war over pasture and all that. Then the immigrants came from Kansas and down there, what they called squatters, breaking up the land.
Plowing.
Plowing. So there was another war, another scrimmage. It was always nothing but guns and...
What do you remember about the grazing war? This was part of it, shooting the horses,
I think. Yes. The shooting of the horses was the beginning. Then the cow punchers that used to ride from different outfits, for different outfits, the Circle Dot, the Flying M, and the Barkay, and oh, I forget all the different brands. In those days, there were no fences. It was an open range, and everybody ranged the cattle together. And my sisters, I remember the abuses that they used to come shouting. These were the lowest scum on the face of earth, these cowpunchers. Firing their guns and shouting insults to my sisters and my woman folks. I must have been 16. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. It was during, it was up in the 30s, or probably before the 30s. The first real bad blow was the crash. My people lost over $1 million on the crash. The banks went broke, and the people were left holding the bags. Then later on...
But did your family still have a range and cattle?
Yes, they still had...
Despite all this, they still had
some. They still had all this, but then comes the crash. And then my father was general manager for the Aragon Enterprises. El Pecador was big boss, but my father was manager. And he lost a little over $90,000 on the oil business.
Was there oil on your land then? Is that on your land or someplace else?
He invested this $90,000 in what they call cat skinning. I don't know exactly what the word means, in Texas. And he lost $90,000. That was another blow, a little over $90,000. And then came the depression, came the crisis. And then it wouldn't rain. The rain went away. And there was no longer any pasture. The waters, even the rivers, were disappearing. And so
El Pecador, by this time, he was so fed up with my father, he just went back to Spain. And I have been out riding.
I have been out in the range, and I was riding into the ranch. I heard one of my sisters scream. I put the spurs to the horse, and I went down to the river where I had heard the scream, where a red-headed cowpuncher had attacked her. That was the day I killed my first man. I put 6 bullets in him. And I told the boys at the bunkhouse, put him in the blacksmith shop while I go to town to get the sheriff. I got in the truck, I went to town, got the sheriff, and the sheriff came and took the body into town. In court, there wasn't even a trial. I was acquitted on the inquest. It was self-defense. So later on, we had the epidemic of the grasshopper. Clouds of grasshopper, millions of them. What little plants there was that were destroyed by this grasshopper, this epidemic. And
that was in about
34 or so. Yes, it was in the early 30s. Mm-hmm. My father then decided, in order to get out of debt, we were poor. But this time we were very, very poor. All the wealth had been vanished, everything gone. My father decided to sell everything and go to California. And I told my father that you do what you want to do with what belongs to you and to the state. But what belongs to me, I'm going to keep it. Because at that time, the government was coming in killing the cattle. They were shooting them.
And if you want to let the government shoot your cattle, that's all right, it's your business. But they're not going to shoot my cattle. And if, well, what are you going to do with them? I said, I have 300 head of cattle belongs to me. 73 horses belongs to me, and 160 acres belongs to me. And he says, yes, but you can't run 300 head of cattle with 160 acres, and, especially now. I said, I'll find a way, but they're not going to kill my cattle.
So I separated my cattle, and I put in my 160 acres, which I still have. I'm the only one that never sold. And so my father sold everything, and for what he could get, he sold the land, he sold the cattle, horses, everything belonged to him, and went to California. That was the last time that I ever saw them. I never see my people again. I then, these three men had been working for my father El Pecador for so many years. They were loyal to me. They knew me since the day I was born. They were loyal to me. So they stayed with me to help me. So then I took my cattle and horses with only three men. I couldn't pay them wages. I told them, I can't pay you. But someday I'll pay you. They stayed with me, and I took them back into the grant, the natural grant, the land that belonged to my people that they had been driven out. I took the cattle there to the upper valley. And but there was only one interest. They call it the Devil Canyon. The only way you could get up into the what they call the upper valley was through the Devil's Canyon.
Is there still grass up there?
And there was plenty of grass and lots of water up there. It was high. So, now I am stealing pasture, I'm stealing grass from the government, from this company. I'm stealing my own grass, in other words. That's what I'm doing. And my men were armed to the teeth, who were up to fight. But nobody ever found me. I stayed up there 2 years. And I had a man, but once a month, every 3 months, come down to town with a pack mule and take supplies. The sheriff, who was a very good friend of mine, he sent word to me, because he was the only one that knew where I was and how to find me. He sent word to me that in Chicago, the stock market in Chicago was good, and that I could get $28 a head of all, big and little. So I decided to make a drive to Raton, New Mexico, and shipped from there to Chicago. And I shipped everything. The horses were sold to the local ranchers. The cattle went back east. The old horses went back east also to the soap factories. But I did pretty good. And so I took my three men with me, and we went to Chicago with the cattle. And I got $28 a head, and for the whole works, I made good money. And but I had nothing to come to. I only had 160 acres back in New Mexico, nothing to come to. And winter was rough, so we decided to hold up in Chicago and see the site, just wait till spring and figure out what to do then. I always wanted to go to Mexico, but I was debating, just thinking. While I was in Chicago, I met my first wife, Pasquala, a beautiful Italian girl. She was the sister of a gangster, of Big Sam Asatelli. He was the bootlegging baron at one time, and he was at the time of Al Capone, and well, what it was that these were bootleggers and the gangsters. There was a fellow by the name of Feliciano Damasio. Feliciano Damasio had killed Big Sam's father. And then Big Sam wiped out Damasio's brothers. And there was a duel there, always some killing about something about an old affair. But Big Sam, at the time that his father, he was just a kid when his father was killed. And his mother died shortly after, which left Pasquala, baby, and there was another little boy, Angelo. And Pasquala. And he had to be father and mother to his brother and sister. And he loved his brother and sister. He was very good to them. And he had a woman to look after the kids. A woman that was ugly as sin. And I'll come to that later on. When we were married, well, Sam was by this time real hot with the law, and other gangs were after him.
And he made a run for South America. He was somewhere in South America. He took his boys with him and went to South America. And we stayed in Chicago. El Pecador couldn't stand it in Spain. So he came back to the States. But this time he found nothing here. My father was in California and his family, and I was somewhere back east. But the sheriff, he could get information from the sheriff where he could find me. So he went to Chicago and joined me in Chicago. And so I had El Pecador and my three men were still with me. They never left me. And so I got a pretty good size army. I had the army of four, but this time.
You got married in Chicago?
Yes, but Pascuala had a heart condition. This I knew before we were married. From a baby, she always had a hard heart condition. We stayed in Chicago. That's why because the doctors told us that
having children was very dangerous for her. And Big Sam Effatelli came back from South America, made another run, and he always came with money and always gave money to my wife. And and everything he did was for my wife and Angelo. He didn't care about his life. All he wanted, but he cared for his brother and sister. He loved them very much. Regardless of what he was, but he was good to his brother and sister. He made another run to China. He was in Singapore. My understanding, that first time he was on the counterfeit business. This time he came back from South America before he went to China. El Pecador told him, because El Pecador and Matilda, the woman that used to take care of Pascuala and Angelo, they never got along. They used to growl at each other. And then they hated each other guts. So El Pecador told Sam, he says, you're going to China. You say you're going to China, he says, do me a favor. Take old Matilda, he called her Dracula's sister. Take Dracula's sister and throw her in the ocean. Feed her to the sharks. And Big Sam says, I think I'll just do that. I don't have any, Pascuala is married now. I don't have any more use for her. And I guess he did, because I never see old Matilda again.
Angelo.
Oh, Angelo was the bright boy. He was in school, and he was a good kid.
After Sam came back from China,
you left him alive?
No, thank you.
Well?
After he came back from China, he went to Italy, and that's where he was killed. Him and Angelo both were killed in a gunfight in Naples.
Angelo ran him into the racket.
Yes. And the poor kid got killed. He had nothing to do. He never hurt anyone. He was a good kid, but he was brother of Big Sam Effatelli.
And DeMarco was operating in Naples at the time, and they were gunned down on the street.
They were interesting people. I once interviewed Capone at that time. I was living in Chicago about that time. I was kind of fascinated by some of those guys. I mean,
well,
always,
it was.
They were interesting.
We got a telegram. We were in Jersey City at that time, and we got a telegram about it. Well, Angelo was killed instantly. Big Sam lived a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, before he died. He was in pretty bad shape, but he didn't die right away.
But
we got a telegram, and we went we went to Italy, and we stayed.
He did go.
Yes, we stayed till Big Sam died, which Big Sam told me, he says, everything belongs to you, he says, to you and Pasquale. Take care of my sister and do me a favor. Get Feliciano Damaso for me. I promise him that I'll get him for it. And Pasquale took very sick. She died in New York, but after that she was never right. She was, her heart was, she was having a stroke all the time continually. She finally died in the hospital. And when Pasquale died, I told El Pacador, first I put up the house for sale, I put everything for sale, the grocery store, everything, and a pool hall that they used to have.
New York?
Yes. I put everything for sale. And everything was sold. And I told El Pecador and the boys, I said, pack up. Get your bags ready. We're leaving this ungodly country. Hope to God I never see it again. We're leaving. We went across, we went to Detroit, Michigan, where I bought a big car. I don't think they make them anymore. They used to call them LaSalles. You remember the big LaSalles?
Yeah. I
bought a big LaSalle, and we got back to New York, and I went to Brooklyn, went to Brooklyn area. To see Nick the Greek. I told Nick, I said, give me 5 pistols, 5 rifle .30-30s, and a submachine gun. The Greek told me, he says, Duke, he says, don't do it. He said, Big Sam is dead. You're a good kid. You're young, you're a good kid. Just get away from here. Go on, he says. I won't even send you the gun, he says. I'll give them to you. He says, but just go away. Forget about everything. Big Sam will never know the difference. Don't get yourself involved. Just go. And so I took my hardware, put it in the car, went to the bank, and I drew most all the money out, and in cash. Got in the car and I drove to come across the Hudson. I stopped the car. It was dark already. I just wanted to see the big city for the last time.
That's a nice place to see it from, in fact,
El Pecador.
You had all your men in your car with you?
Yes. And I was the only one that could drive.
Oh.
So I looked across to see the city, and the color said, that's a sinful city. That's a city of blood and disaster. That's gangland over there, where dog eats dog. I said, where are we going, son? says, I don't know. I don't know, El Pecador. I don't know where we're going. We're going away. We're going somewhere where we're going to put Big Sam's blood money into good use. We're going to get ourselves an empire, the one we used to have. We're going to have the biggest cattle empire ever known. We have the money. We're on top of the world now. We may even go to Argentina, where cattle is so plentiful. I don't know where we're going. I kept driving, kept going south. For some reason, I kept going south, south. And New Orleans.
We rested a while there in New Orleans. We got into Texas, and then I start west, southwest, southwest. We crossed the border in Juarez, across the Mexican border. And we just kept going. Didn't know where we were going, just going. By this time, I had made up my mind that we were going to Argentina. How soon, I didn't know, but eventually we wind up in Argentina. Well, it just so happened, we didn't know the road, we didn't know anything, and we wind up in Acapulco. We'd been out on the road a long time. We had good clothes on, but we'd been sleeping on them.
And we looked like tramps by the time we got to Acapulco. And we stopped at Entrada de las Americas. And when we came in, the El Pecador looked like some general just coming out of the battlefield.
Was he a big man?
He was a big man. He had this curly white beard.
Oh.
And he looked good, always looked good. And I was by his side and the three other men behind us. And came up and I registered. I was the only one that could ride anyway. So the clerk pulled the registrar away from me. He said, we don't want your kind in here. And so El Pecador told him, he says, look, we can buy Prado de las Americas, we can buy Acapulco, and we can sell you. He says, and he opened the briefcase and started pulling bundles of money. He says, the clerk says, excuse me, I didn't recognize you. I didn't know who you were because you're not wearing a tie. And so he had me back to register. I registered, I told him, give us two rooms. And we want the best. I wanted to clean up. I was tired.
You just done doing all the driving?
I'm disgusted with everything. So said, fine. I gave a bellhop a 10-spot, told him to take care of the car and bring in our luggage and our artillery. And after I did that, I just haul off and hit him in the mouth, hit the clerk in the mouth. So El Pecador, he says, come on, son, let's have a drink. So we go into the beer lounge. The bouncer there, I was in good shape. I was a healthy kid. The bouncer made the same mistake trying to throw me out. So I had to knock him out, too. I laid him on the floor. I just went behind the bar. Now, the floor show stopped, everything stopped. It was so quiet in the place that you could hear a pin drop. And here comes five rugged guys, one great big man that looked like a general, and the rest of us looked like regular gunmen. And I just went behind the bar and I looked at the stock over. I saw a bottle that I thought was pretty good, and I poured a drink, and I thought I would drink it. He said, "That's pretty good, son."
Well, I peeled out some bills and laid them on the bar, walked out with a bottle. On the way out back, I think I would turn around and kick the bouncer. In the seat of the pants. And we walked out. And but that night at the desk, there was a man and a young girl, very distinguished man. What they were doing, they were sending the man was Dr. D'Arcy. He was sending a telegram to France. He was professor in the university. And
they saw us. Well, I saw them too, but I didn't pay any attention to them. But they were too curious, because these people had just followed us, the man and the girl, all the way. First I hit the clerk, and I knocked out the bouncer, and helped myself to a bottle, and all the time they just followed us. They were curious. Next day, we were real sharp. We got real cleaned up and real sharp and came down for breakfast, where I met Dr. D'Arcy and his daughter, Philomena. And he was a man about 40, French origin, and he was teaching in Mexico, but they were vacationing in Acapulco. We got along fine. For the next few days, we became real good friends. Well, it just so happened that a week or two weeks later, Philomena and I were engaged. And
we were married right there in the hotel. This Sunday, we were riding around in my big car, and we'd been out to the beach, and we'd been all over the place. We were doing nothing but riding around. I saw this man and a little boy, and the little boy was having a heck of a time trying to get the man across the street. The man was drunk. And as he got, I stopped the car and gave him a chance to get across the street. As they went across the street, the man fell and hit the back of his neck on the sidewalk and killed himself instantly. He was dead just like that. And the boy didn't know that his father was dead. He was trying to pick him up. I got out of the car to help the boy. As soon as I got a hold of the man, I knew he was dead. So I called the doctor. I said, "Doctor, you better come here. I said, this man is in bad shape." The doctor examined him and said, "Should be good." And the boy starts crying right away. He says, "My papa, what's the matter with him?" I says, I says, "Call the police and call an ambulance." And she went across the street to a drugstore to let them know what had happened. Meantime, I asked the kid, I says, "Where's your mother? We have to let your mother know that your father is hurt. He has to go to the hospital." And I wouldn't tell him that he was dead. So he said, "My mother is dead." See, she had died during the hurricane. just as my mother is dead. I only have three sisters. Well, I'll go, well, let's go tell your sisters. And he says, no, he says, my sisters don't know, don't understand. I said, what do you mean they don't know, they don't understand? He said, they're too small. And I asked him, how old are they? He says, Maria is 5, and Gloria is 3 months, 4 months, or what is it, 4 months old. I said, my God. So I told El Pecador, I said, you and the doctor and Philomena wait here for the police and the ambulance. I'm going to take this kid and find out what about his family, about his sisters. He says they're small. And so I got the kid in the car and I went down to the poor people section of Acapulco, which is there, which it was terrible in those days. And it was terrible. And the slums. So I went down to the slums and it was the saddest thing I had ever seen, those two kids. So what could I do? I just picked up a baby, and the boy got, Marcos was the boy's name, took the little girl by the hand, and we got in the car, and we drove back. And I took him to the hotel, and so I called the doctor, examined them. I told him better examine them, see in what shape they are. So the doctor examined them, and he said they're in very healthy condition. They're real healthy kids. So Pecador said, well, let's give them a bath and make them sure they're all right. We have to be loud, these little bastards. Yeah. They got busy delousing the kids while I made arrangements with the authorities. I didn't know what to do. And but Philomena, she wants to keep the kids. The doctor wants to keep the kids. So I arranged everything and we adopted the kids. We adopted the three kids. The little boy, Maria, Marcos, mm-hmm. Maria, and Gloria. So here I am already with a family
that I never raised. I mean, the doctor was the one that raised the kids. Oh. And but it was the household anyway. During this time, I have been noticing a young man of Italian descent, dark complected, gray eyes, cold as the snow in the mountains. I've noticed him in the lobby, I have seen him in the bar lounge, I have seen him on the patio, and also in the dining room. And every time I meet this guy, he turns his head away from me, or he picks up a paper, or he goes to the newsstand, or do something, but he avoided me. I didn't know him.